Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Your end-of-life plans, do you have any? Palliative care deals with these key aspects of those plans, ending life plans, like managing symptoms, like pain, and what do you do about those tough decisions at the end of life. We're going to talk about this, have this conversation, hopefully spur you to think about these things that we generally don't like to think about, but give us a call, 614-8980. Our guest this half hour is Dr. Jason Morrow. He's a palliative doctor. He's giving a lecture tonight at Trinity University with the part of the Friends of Hospice event. And welcome to The Source, Doctor.
Thank you very much, David.
So palliative care, what is that?
Palliative care is a discipline within medicine and nursing. It's a multidisciplinary field involving social workers, chaplains as well. The focus of palliative care is to help people who have advanced illness and have symptoms related to that illness. We do three things, as you hinted at. One is we focus on symptom management related to advanced illness. So we see a lot of patients with heart failure, cancer, dementia, strokes, kidney disease, wounds, all of whom who have a high symptom burden, like pain, shortness of breath, constipation, anxiety, trouble sleeping, all the things that you can suffer from with advanced illness. So other than helping with symptoms, we also help with tough decisions, which means we need to counsel people on the types of healthcare interventions that are possible, and to help them think through their options, employing not only their own values, but the types of treatments that are likely to help, and bring together other specialists to facilitate conversations. So the family meeting is an important part of what we do. So symptoms, helping people with decisions, and then the third thing we do is help people get the kind of support they need. I spend a lot of time in the hospital. That means I try to bring to bear the social worker, the chaplains, and other supportive services to help people and families cope with tough decisions and advanced illness. It also means that we try to help people before they get too sick, meet them in the clinic, follow them in the clinic, help them as they're going through their illness. One of the messages I like to get out to my colleagues in cancer care and other specialties is that palliative care is a perfect ally for curative interventions. So it's not about stopping treatment. It's not about giving up on anything. It's about bringing together resources to help people get through whatever they have to get through, whether it's in the hospital, in the cancer clinic, or with their primary care doctor.
So pretty much everyone is going to have to deal with this. This is really hard to avoid the eventual, focal point, the moment. It's going to come, right?
Well, we have an increasingly aging population with chronic illnesses, and chronic illnesses are the sorts of things that you can expect complications. You can expect things to get tough. You can expect to go to the hospital and have a journey there. Some people die traumatically in the emergency room, on our roads, but there are an increasing number of people who are going to be facing chronic illness and therefore have an opportunity to have a healthcare relationship with providers that is meaningful. And reaching people as early in their illness as possible, I mean engaging people who have newly diagnosed diabetes, blood pressure, other illnesses that bring complications, including stroke and heart attack, etc. The idea is to reach these people as soon as possible in the course of illness. And while you may not need a palliative care specialist when you're first diagnosed with diabetes, palliative interventions can begin at that time. The idea is that we are promoting comfort and relief of symptoms. And why wouldn't we consider that part a central and integral part of healthcare?
When I had to deal with my parents and their end-of-life issues, I was woefully inadequately prepared for it, and it's tough to deal with. What can I do? What can anyone do to be better prepared to deal with these issues?
Well, thanks for that, David. I think I find when I meet people who are interested or curious about palliative care, the first thing they do is share stories, which is a reminder that the practice we're talking about is the most human of practices. A lot of healthcare is about technology, about antibiotics, about what the doctors and the system and the technology can offer. It's an industry. But at the heart of the practice are the patients and the family members who are going through something. They're trying to cope. So to anticipate the needs of people who will one day be telling the stories of their loved ones, we as providers, need to think through what the experience is like and have conversations that help people anticipate their experiences. And what I mean is this. A lot of what I do is paint a picture of what the journey ahead might look like. And when I do that, when I say what recovery might look like, what cure will look like, what things will tell you that you're on that road so that you don't have to guess and wait for that doctor appointment, you can know yourself. Or alternatively, what the road to decompensating or progression or a deteriorating condition, what things your doctor knows that that's happening, that that's the road you're on, you need to know. So part of becoming better able to help your family cope with illness and loss is having an understanding of what the road ahead might look like. So one technique I often use to help people is to use the language of milestones. I say, all right, well, you're dealing with heart failure, you're dealing with dementia, or your father is dealing with heart failure and dementia. How are you going to know that we're going to stay stable for a while and have some good times ahead, or that things are getting worse? And I'll tell people, well, the milestones you'll be looking out for are this. Is your father rehabilitating? Is he walking? Is he having functional independence at home? These are good signs that you're on the road to stability or recovery. Or are you hearing bad news from the doctors that now there's kidney failure, now there's pneumonia? Because people with chronic illness who experience new illnesses are not likely to recover to their full functional status. And that can be scary to talk about, but it can also be liberating for family members who are really hoping for full recovery and tearing themselves up when they don't accomplish that. So beginning with conversations about what the road ahead might look like is the first way to become empowered and prepared to help your loved one.
All right, we're talking about palliative care with Dr. Jason Morrow. He's a doctor who specializes in this area. He's given a lecture tonight at Trinity University with the Friends of Hospice, and you're also with the UT Health Science Center in San Antonio. And if you want to call in and share your stories or how anecdotes you may have for to help other people deal with these sensitive issues in this time when people are really grieving, they're upset. It's not easy to think clearly about these issues when it comes up, when you're in the moment, Dr. Jason. So, you know, it's better to deal with it now before that time is here?
Right. As soon as you think of it, that's probably a good time to talk to somebody. And it doesn't have to be a physician. It can be a social worker, a chaplain, or one of the best resources people have are their friends and family to learn what experiences they have. And having peer support, having allies, people who you can talk to, is critically important to coping, whether it's in healthcare or otherwise. Sometimes it feels too early. And people have an anxiety that by talking about things that might happen, that they'll make them happen, or that they'll unnecessarily experience the sense of loss or anxiety or sadness that they're fearing they'll ultimately experience. But the truth is that an ounce of prevention is worth an ounce of cure, whether it's at the end of life or beginning of life. And the more empowered we can be to have these discussions, the more empowered we can be to help the people that we love. So there is a process that was coined in the nursing literature called advanced care planning. And I'd like to tell you about that after the break.
Yeah, we're going to take a break right now. Thank you for that, Dr. Jason. If you want to jump in on the conversation, share your stories, the number to call is 614-8980. We're talking about palliative care and end-of-life decisions. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. We're talking about end-of-life decisions and palliative care with Dr. Jason Morrow. You can jump in on the conversation. The number is 614-8980. We do have some callers you want to get to. Karen's on the line. And what would you like to add to our conversation, Karen?
I don't have an immediate family member that's ever died, but I helped a friend whose mother-in-law was ill with a long-term disease, and she didn't realize how close her mother-in-law was to dying, nor did the son, because they were just, you know, she was living in the home with them, and they just couldn't see the progression that was happening. And I went to a doctor's appointment with them, and it was pretty clear to me what the doctor was saying, that, you know, they could provide certain treatments, but their mother-in-law was going to die, you know, and the treatment could make her uncomfortable. But, you know, they didn't hear that. They were so close to it, they couldn't hear it. And I think sometimes doctors need to find a way to, you know, it's really hard, I'm sure, but to let them know, you know, more clearly, really what's happening. And sometimes I don't think they're tactfully explicit enough, I guess, because it's hard for the family member to see what's happening and to hear it.
All right.
And deal with it.
Thank you for those comments, Karen. So, Dr. Jason, how much training do doctors get in dealing with these this sensitive time?
Well, it's an increasingly represented portion of medical training, both in medical school and in post-medical school training. Back in the 70s, there probably wasn't much in the way of how to talk to your patients or empathic communication. But these days, it's increasingly the norm. And we should expect of our doctors that they're capable at least of having the basic skills of communicating information. The specialty of palliative medicine is one that is takes pride in trying to do a good job about communicating clearly while at the same time being positive and life-affirming. But it does take special training, and it takes a certain level of willingness to walk that walk and be amongst people who are really experiencing loss and grief. I do. I am remiss about the physician that didn't really communicate perhaps what the prognosis might be or what the pros and cons of treatment options might be. On the one hand, providers are responsible for communicating clearly what a patient's prognosis is and what the risks and the benefits and alternatives to different treatments might be. At the same time, there is an element of personal responsibility for accepting certain services that are offered or accepting news. And the context in which these conversations happen are so filled with emotion, and they're so filled with all those interpersonal family dynamics that make communication hard at times, and we all recognize that. I recently cared for a woman who was absolutely terrific, sort of had a thick shell about her, didn't really want doctors, didn't want her up in her business or privacy, and yet she was very sick. And I recognized this. I met her in the hospital at the time where she was diagnosed with a metastatic cancer. I tried to talk very clearly about her prognosis. I think she understood it. I tried to offer hospice because I thought hospice would be the way to help her and her family stay at home, which is what she told me, what she really wanted. But you know, she said she didn't want it. Her vision was that hospice is something that you do when you give up, that you wait till after all treatments are done, and then 2 days before you die, you can sign up in hospice. But that model is changing, and I'm very sad that this lady missed out on an opportunity to help her and her family. In fact, when she presented to a hospital with what was her dying day, the son called me, and I really did everything I could to try to help her get hospice even on that day. Why? Because I felt that even though it was late in the process and we missed on an opportunity to provide good home support, that we have to advocate for families who are going through loss at home. And if we reach out to people in the home, we can help them cope, and we can help them grieve healthily and move on in their lives while also honoring the people that they cared for. So thank you, Karen, for calling.
All right, and still some other callers on the line. We're going to try and get to them. Kathy's on the air. Welcome to The Source, Kathy.
Good afternoon. I'm so grateful that you're talking about this wonderful, wonderful topic. I've done hospice work and just have gotten so much joy and reward from it, as you can well imagine, Doctor. But what I wanted to comment about was that for family members, just in case, I'm sure they've heard it before, but even if in those final days or weeks or whatever it is, that let's say their loved ones seem to be in and out of a coma or perhaps unconscious a lot, but still alive. And the thing that I tried to bring to all of the family members was that, and this is because of something that happened when my grandmother died, and I saw it happen, is that even though you think that they're unconscious, they can hear you, they can feel you touching them, you know, all this kind of stuff, they know you're there. And the story that I'd like to share with you and with all the listeners is this. My grandmother was, again, in hospice, and for about 4 or 5 days, she had just not moved. Even though she was breathing fine, everything, so she just didn't move, no response. And my grandfather was there, and I was about 10 feet away, and I had been combing her hair and this and that. And he goes, let me come in and just pay a little attention to her. And he just got about 2 inches from her face, and he says, I love you so much. I'm going to give you a kiss now. And she literally puckered her lips up. And it was so beautiful. And we all just went, oh, my gosh, look at Nanny, you know. And it was just that one thing. And I went, oh, let me try. Unfortunately, she didn't respond to me like she responded to him. But the point is, they can hear you. And they're so grateful that you're there. And, you know, watch your words. Make sure that even if it's not, you're not talking to her, make sure there's no angry talk amongst, you know, the family members about whatever it may be. just surround that person with love, 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 and, you know, help them on their journey. And that's what I wanted to call an invention.
Well, Kathy, that was a great story, and thank you for sharing that with us, Dr. Morrow.
Well, yeah, thanks, Kathy. That really, I really resonate with that. That's, you know, that's what it's about. It's about those moments, those unpredictable, sacred moments in the provision of health care and family care where something beautiful can happen. And that's what keeps me going when a lot of my patients die and a lot of their families grieve. And there's a lot of anxiety and frustration and sadness and regret. And that's not fun, but it is fun to be a part of moments where the candor and the sincerity and the intimacy are there. And you can really try to make something meaningful out of something that is tragic. You know, I have several roles at the Health Science Center at University Hospital, help lead a palliative care team with some really great colleagues. I work as part of the Center for Medical Humanities and Ethics, where we try to teach empathy to medical students and to residents. And the idea of these systems working together is to try to get students and residents and young doctors to experience those moments. It's those moments that sustain us. It's those moments that illuminate the type of doctor we want to be. You know, this profession, whether you're a nurse or a doctor or a therapist or what have you, if you're with patients, then you aspire to something. And the aspiration that I think we share in common, whether you're a cancer doctor or whether you're in palliative care or hospice, the aspiration is to try to make some human connection. And that's what you're getting out of healthcare when you, as a system, invest in palliative care and hospice. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy. And more calls here. Chrissy's on the line. Welcome to The Source, Chrissy.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. I just also am like the previous callers. I don't have a question, but I did want to thank you for having this topic, and I wanted to let you know that I've had two different experiences. I've lost both of my parents in my early 40s, and I cared for both of them in my home. With my mom, I did not have palliative care. She had congestive heart failure. And it was very traumatic to go through this and not have a supportive team. With my dad, I lost him on January 16th of this year.
Wow,
and
sorry.
I had hospice. I had VITAS, and I had Morningside Manor. He was at Kendall House. And he was supported and loved, and I was supported and loved by an amazing team of people. And it was such a different experience, and I was able to be with him for his last breath, and I have no regret because I had that experience and because I had this team in place. And it is traumatic the first time they sit down with you and you don't know what to expect, and they tell you the process of what hospice is. But you just need to have faith and trust that these people know what they're doing, these doctors and nurses, and just trust that they have your best interest and they have your family members' best interest in mind. They've been doing this for a long time. They know what they're doing. They're professionals, and they do it with great love and respect, and it's such a different experience. I can just tell you from my own personal experience that it is so much better to go through that process with, like you said, the palliative healthcare system with that in place. I don't want to ramble, but I can't speak highly enough.
Well, Chrissy, I really want to thank you for your call, and I'm really sorry to hear about your dad and your mom, and thank you again for your call. We appreciate it. So, you know, Chrissy shows us that the difference you could have with a little bit of palliative help.
Yeah, that's right. And I appreciate your story, Chrissy. And honestly, sharing it with the public like this is a way to help all those other people who feel invisible, who feel alone, who are caring for people at home and shouldering a burden. It feels isolating, and that steals your morale, and that makes it hard to get back to work. It colors your whole life. It colors your whole life, even after you lose somebody. The rest of your life you spend thinking about the experiences that you have. And the words that you use about having no regret, about having faith and trust, well, that's the noble cause that this healthcare profession has invited all of us to participate in. I feel like, you know, you lose your parents, you know, it's a natural part of life. And the healthcare system isn't designed to accommodate those type of experiences. So the more we can bring together compassionate care and have conversations with people throughout the process, the better off we'll all be. Thank you.
And thank you, Dr. Jason Morrow, expert on palliative care. You're going to be at Trinity University this evening giving a lecture on this. And thanks to our callers. I'm so sorry we couldn't get to all of our callers. You've been listening to The Source on KSTX. The conversation continues on our website at tpr.org. You can still comment there. Paul Flav is the producer of The Source. Wayne Coble is the TPR program director. Chris Udaly is our web producer. We get production help from Catherine Dixon. I'm David Martin Davies. You can check us out online at tpr.org. Support from The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.